times when categorically it has been my absolute dream job, and less times I'm thankful to say that I could have happily walked away and gone and worked somewhere else. But it's been a tremendous 5 years, and it kind of feels, it's not really a goodbye today, but I kind of feel like it is poignant that this is CAP Sunday, and in the next couple of weeks I'm going to be stepping away from CAP. On a new adventure, a very exciting adventure. Gordy and I are embarking on the adventure of raising a ginger baby together. If anyone has any hints on raising girls, then let me know, because I can see of goals, and I can tell you anything you like about Manchester City, but I'm curious to not go down the unicorn route. So what I thought I would do was, we'll show you a recap reveal. I'll share a little bit about some of the key Bible verses and the words of prophecy that have been spoken over the centre in the last 5 years, and then I thought I'd share a little bit about what I have learned. I had a very different talk planned, and it changed in the car on the way here, so please extend a little grace if I'm perhaps a little bit less linear than I'd like. But let's look at the video first.
Father and Father, and today I just started feeling so guilty, like as if I wasn't a proper mum and it's all my fault. And I cut myself off from all my friends. I wasn't coping myself, and I didn't want anyone else to know. Before I got in today, I was with my partner for 23 years. We had three children. The relationship fell apart, and I became a single parent. I was diagnosed with systemic lupus, which is a chronic autoimmune disease. I couldn't work. And one of the symptoms of lupus is brain fog. It got me into debt because I was forgetting to pay bills. I was paying some bills and not paying other bills. The debt got really bad. Life was, it was unbearable. I just thought that life would be better for my children if I wasn't there. So I'd found some vodka that was in the house, and I was mixing it with wine, and I just sat in the box and I was just opening tablets, and just, it just seemed the only way out. There was no way. I couldn't deal with the debts, I couldn't deal with anything. It just was, yeah, it was horrible. Sorry. I really first felt hope with CAP when I realised that I wasn't on my own, that someone was there to hold my hand. Mary came down for the first visit. Oh, it was just so good. There was paperwork everywhere, all over the living room floor. They were trying to get everything in order. But we got through like all the paperwork and everything, and it got sent to Bradford. It was just like this huge weight was taken off my shoulders. It's really hard to explain. It was just, there was people there and people cared. And I think I started becoming me again. I started asking lots of questions about God. Mary had said that Central Church was doing an Alpha course. Went on that. And then I started going to Central Church. There was one night I was at church, and they were singing Good, Good Father. I just thought, God loved me for who I am. I don't have to be this perfect person for God to love me. I just had tears rolling down my face and just thought, yeah, I want God in my life. Yes, I am very happy in life. I'm still not debt-free, but that day is coming. Yeah, about a year. So it's there. I know what I'm aiming for. Having God in my life, it's just expanded everything. I'm not this isolated person anymore. Life is just great.
On behalf of everybody at Christians Against Poverty,
thank you. I'll interrupt John before he asks you for money. I'm not going to. So as I prepare 5 years ago to go down to Bradford, and as I chapter that really struck me in the Bible, and I know is important to us as a congregation, is from Isaiah 61, particularly verse 1. The Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. And in that first year, as I got to grips with the job, and as I prayed, and as I got to meet clients, I really felt the Lord saying to me, this debt centre is a vehicle for revival. And that was really exciting. I was like, yeah, come on, let's do a revival, Jesus. When? All right, okay, when? You know, I kind of wrestled with the fact that that didn't happen immediately, and my personality is quite unique. The work ethic you have to make things happen. During that first year, God taught me several things. He taught me that poverty comes in all forms. I worked with people in Mungai and Bergen who had multiple hand-sized cars and would bring out a tea tray with your Marks and Spencers and Rachel's biscuits on it and then tell you about their mortgage deficit or their huge credit card loans. But their marriage was an absolute hazard. And then I would work with people in Euchre or Drumchapel or in Lynch who had a mistake. So I learned a lot more about how poverty affects people in different ways. Poverty of spirit, poverty of relationship, poverty of connection, poverty of money. But most of all, the poverty of not knowing Jesus. And that was a really, really important thing to learn in the first year. Probably slightly more important than that was my own personal learning curve of responsibility, and I felt that Jesus said to me, Nicola, it's not your job to bring the Bible. It is not your job to do that. It is your job. I have anointed you to bring good news to the poor. Leave the rest up to me. And that was an important lesson. Looking at the vehicle for revival thing, I don't think that's stopped, and I don't think that's changed. So as we move into the next stage, the next season of our debt centre, I really want you guys to grab hold of that phrase, a vehicle for revival. God is using this debt centre not to just transform lives, not to just help people get in charge of their pennies or find new jobs or to save their marriages, but actually so that people can intimately know Jesus Christ and see their lives transformed by them. And well, one of the things that I've also learned is that I've learned as much from my clients as hopefully they have learned from me, and I have clients who are now friends and clients who are now people I consider to be family as a result of my 5 years of post. So we stayed in that place for a little while and then we moved on. And three different people gave me the following verse from Habakkuk 2, verse 2. Then the Lord said to me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so that he who may run can use it. I think I'm maybe getting that down wrong, but you get the idea. I think that was an awful lot about accountability and an awful lot about having a clear strategy. So I spent quite a lot of time with God asking for strategy. And it was Alan Ross or Emma Stork, somebody who had come to the church to prophesy had said to me, this centre is going to be something that transforms the community and culture. And I was so terribly excited by that because as a parent, as someone who works closely with children, my other job, I don't want kids to grow up in this environment where it's bigger, better, more. I don't want my kids to grow up thinking, wanted the next upgrade of their iPhone or the next computer games, or it's all about me. I want my kids to be people who are able to see the world beyond them. So we started to pray a lot about that in our cat prayer groups. We started to build partnerships with other churches, build beyond White Inch, build community with churches in Bearsden, in Knightswood. There's a church up in Clevedon that has that connection with us, White Glasgow Unity Church. I was out in Clydebank with the Salvation Army. We've got connections now with Partick South. So we started to see our own community start to form here. Good people who have stood with us faithfully, financially, prayerfully. People who have offered me tremendous support, and I really enjoyed that. The idea dropped into our heads that perhaps helping people to sort out their debt wasn't enough, and we actually needed to go a step before that. We need to help people to not get into debt in the first place. So we trained up some folk to do cap money courses, focusing on student cap money courses. I developed a child-friendly version that I took into primary schools. That was a whole different challenge and a whole lot of fun. And I will never forget my son Joshua's face as I was invited into his class to teach everyone how to look after their families. And everyone, all that they're all P4 at the time, they were all like, Joshua, that's your mum. And he was like, yeah, I knew. She's my mum. Around that time, as I was praying in the CAP community, a guy called Ian Henderson from West London Church came on board. And he trained up as our community links coordinator. And he's worked ever so hard with job centres and housing associations to help us to just become known in the city, to take our vision forward, to write the vision. This verse makes me laugh because I think a tablet now is a very different kind of thing than it was back in the day. But he did that, he helped me to do that. He wrote on our vision and we took it into different areas, strategically job centres, housing associations, schools, community groups, Rainbow House, youth fellowships. We worked closely with the Rail Trust with Karen and Catherine there. And we wrote our vision and we shared it. And we were pretty much relentless. We didn't see the fruit of that immediately. And again, that was very frustrating. That was a kind of, what's the point? What am I missing? Where are we going wrong kind of moment? But God is faithful and he has grown that over the year in a way that is sustainable, in a way that we can actually manage. Whereas I think if everything had happened at once, it might be a bit spooky. And this is the most recent one, the next verse. And I just love this so much. Shut your mouth is a really, shut your beak. It's something we say a lot in Northern Ireland, and I did when I was growing up. And I nearly got chased up the stairs with a wooden spoon for telling my brother to shut his beak when I was growing up. Certainly not language that's encouraged in our home. So I just love that it's in the Bible, and just a shut its mouth. The poor have hope. And that's kind of the point. This has probably been my most frightening and prominent views this last year or two in the CAP Debt Centre, as we have grown, as we have seen. We had a slow trickle of referrals and a slow trickle of clients in the first years, but it has just exploded over the last wee while. And it was Alan Ross came here 3 years ago nearly, and he said, this centre is going to stand for righteousness in a corrupt generation. Righteousness in a corrupt generation. And I was like, wow, what part of that is just the most exciting? I just didn't know. I just wanted injustice to shut its mouth. I just wanted the poor to have hope. Since that particular prophecy, I have seen clients have a voice, because God has put us there to intervene and to advocate on their behalf. We have seen three people who should have been made homeless. We've seen those people remain in their homes. One woman, a lady called Catherine in Mary Hill, we saved her home, I'm not joking, you 15 minutes to spare. It was perhaps the most stressful day I've ever had in my life, but she is still there. She is debt-free. I had to put on my suit and pretend to be a grown up. But we have, I have met with three sheriff officers and we have saved three homes. We've halted three evictions. We've seen big power companies being halted in their action. They've been threatening to cut people off from gas and electricity in the middle of winter. Like last March, what's that all about? You know, when it was really snowy. And we have seen three homes where we've had action halted against the big power companies who said, we want our money, you're not getting heat. And they have turned around, they've done a complete U-turn because God has intervened. God has given the poor hope and shut the mouth of injustice. We have seen the DWP reverse decisions on benefits claims. And it's really interesting. My brother in Northern Ireland, he's a really good man. And he's recently been promoted within the civil service. And his job now, he gets to decide whether benefits appeals have merit legally or not. So we're working at opposite ends of the spectrum. I'm going into court and putting together appeals saying, come on, this lady, she can't even, like, she's incontinent, or she can't stand, or she's got incredible mental health difficulties. She needs this payment. And my brother is the man who gets to say yes or no. And I'm ever so glad that he is, because he's a good man and a fair man, and he's just the kind of person that we need in the system. And it's been fun kind of talking about things with him, although I never once told him to shut his beak. But we've seen God intervene at government level, at major power company level, at sheriff court level, and we've seen people who should have been relentless, who should have been unbending, we've seen people completely change their attitude, and that's because God has given people hope, and God has shut the mouth of injustice, and he has equipped us as a team to stand for righteousness in a corrupt generation. And as we see the changes in benefits, and who knows what Brexit's going to bring, as we have seen the rolling out of universal credits, and people continue to fall deeper and deeper into poverty, as we have seen crackdowns in the DWP, we are not going to give you your PIC payment. You should be able to go out and work, even though you're too frightened to get on the bus. You should be able to do this. You should be able to do that. We're going to sanction your benefits at source. I have some clients who are living on 50p disposable income a week. God is helping us as a Cap Debt Centre to stand for righteousness in a corrupt generation. And I believe he is going to be able, he is going to continue to do that. So we'll just very quickly read out those three prophecies again, because I want those to stick with you. I'm happy to email them out to anyone who wants to pray for us. So our debt centre is, I believe, in the name of Jesus of Nazareth, a vehicle for revival. So let's claim that. I believe that together, as the debt centre, as a team, as a church family, and as a partnership of churches, God is going to equip us and motivate us and use us in the transformation of community and culture. And I believe that he is and has helped us to stand for righteousness in a corrupt generation. I believe that he is giving your hope and shutting the mouth of injustice. Now, you don't just want to hear me, so I am going to pass you over to Maureen, and she's going to share a little bit of her experience. I'm going to try and do some magic here.
Go.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, I'll start again. So the heading I was given is When Hope Walks In, and I wanted to think a little bit about before Hope Walks In. And I was saying that I've been in the CAP Centre since June, but I was doing training in June, July, and then I was shadowing Nicola for a month. So since September, I've actually had six. So it's October, November, in 2 months I've had six referrals to the centre, and that's one every week and a half, which is actually, I mean, that's really phenomenally fast. And yes, I've taken up some Nicholas referrals and taken on my own, but I'm getting really good experience. But in that time, before Hope Walks In, I've seen people with mental health issues, anxiety, stress, depression, thoughts of self-harm, thoughts of suicide, poor eating patterns and disturbed sleep. So people are in a bit of a state when we walk in, first of all. And the reasons for the debt are relationship breakdown, homelessness, PTSD, bereavement, investments gone wrong, and DWP payments. So almost anything you can think of, it's for no reason than any, then people don't plan to get into debt, they just fall into it and life takes over. And by the time they come to us, they've tried all means of managing their situation. They've tried payday loans to try and keep the creditors at bay. They've tried credit cards. They've ignored creditors' letters and phone calls. And they've cried out internally for an answer to their situation. And they feel alone and desperate. And we turn up on their doorstep. And hope is on their doorstep. I was reading this morning, Eugene Peterson, in his Bible translation, The Message, writes in Luke chapter 6, verse 9, of the 70 disciples that were sent out by Jesus, that they carried the kingdom of God to the very doorsteps of the houses they visited. And I like that picture, that you carry the kingdom of God to the very doorsteps of the houses. And I feel that that was an encouragement for me, a picture for me to hold on to, that when I go to somebody's door, that the kingdom of God comes to, and it enters in when they open the door, and they invite us in. And as I say, it walks in the shape of me, Nicola, David, and it might not look very much, but we carry God's presence, and we have a tangible light, and we're a tangible light in the darkness in which they're sitting. We listen to them, we care, and we acknowledge their bravery and ask them for help. We hold out hope that they're not alone, that they matter, that God has heard their cry. He sees, he cares, and he is with them. And we share our testimony, we tell of God breaking through in our lives, and witness that there is life beyond the challenges that they're facing now. And we start the process with them of climbing up and out of the pit that they've been sinking in. The process itself is an overwhelming process. Especially the second visit is the visit where the first visit are basically getting to know people. The second visit is the fact-finding visit, and that's where we take all their information, gather all the information about their debts. And it's a really stripping process. It's a process where people feel a lot of shame, and they come out with, like, and I've got this there, and they tell you their story, and you can see them feeling really overwhelmed, and just, and we just sit with them, and we take it all in, we put it all down. Sometimes we have to rein them in because they want to tell us everything, and we have to say, okay, let's try and keep on track, let's. But sometimes they get so overwhelmed, they just walk away, and they have to go outside and then come back in when they've learned how to breathe slowly again and just focus their minds and get back to the task. So it's not an easy process, it's one which can take several hours, and one which can take sometimes a couple of visits to do. And then we come to the budget visits. Now I've got two budget visits waiting to be done, and I've got another two fact-finding visits to be done, and I've got another new referral to be done this week. So these are really good positives, given the fact that it's just a couple of months that we're in place. So, and again, that is about the groundwork that Nicola has laid. It's about what's gone before and what is being picked up now. And I just think it's a real testimony to where the sentence is at, and it's in good hands.
So I'm Ben, I'm a money coach at CAP, and we're working here in financial transformation since May. So if you don't know about CAP Money, it's a 3-week course, and they're designed to give kind of people skills and knowledge to budget effectively. And so we're drilled in, this is not your money advisors, you know, just coaches. And I really appreciate the coaching emphasis, because it's quite an empowering process. You're helping people think, how can I make the decision that's best for myself and my family? But I think one of the big things is, it's up to people to put those principles into practice. And so that is one of the challenges of the role, is kind of, you can only bring change to people who really want that change. I have a role, and it's working with a mission order called Inner Change, and I think it was Simon and Moira last week. So I work with Simon Moira on the team in Postle Park. And we work in poor and marginalised communities across the world, bringing the hope of Jesus. And as we walk alongside people who are poor and on the margins, we believe that Christ can reveal his loving presence through us. And so I think the work that we do at CAP really kind of fits in very well in working alongside people who need hope and freedom that Jesus wants to bring. I think I really just want to spend some time talking about an experience I had in a very difficult context. And to really echo what Maureen was saying about the nitty-grittiness of being home. So sometimes we can kind of think that Cap is kind of flashy and glamorous and it does amazing things, but it's actually really messy and hard as well. And I think it's very easy to kind of put people on a pedestal. And actually the reality is working with people who are poor and marginalized is challenging and messy. It's sometimes easy to romanticize working with the poor and to overlook the messy reality that that can often entail. People with addictions to anything from alcohol and gambling frequently have chaotic lives. Lives can be in the here and now. Saving for their pension is probably not the highest priority. There's also a lot of stigma around addictions. Those with addictions can experience being looked down upon by the professionals that they work with. Getting a job is hard. Their CV perhaps doesn't look so shiny. They may have faced multiple disappointments with people. And so, as I went into an alcohol drug rehab centre to teach them these budgeting skills, I probably didn't have a huge amount of street credit, to be honest. I didn't have huge amounts of drug addictions, which Jesus has saved me from. I've had plenty of other things that Jesus has saved me from, but not drug and alcohol issues. So I didn't really have the best street cred in this experience. And I think what I want to talk about is my experience in that context and how that was a lot of reflection on how I approached the working camp. So we looked at the usual parts. This was back in September, August. What are attitudes to money? What are the things that stress them out? How do we budget? How do we put a budget together? But what I heard was, how can I budget? I have £25 a week. How am I supposed to budget? I don't have enough money. You can only budget if you have, you know, hundreds of pounds. And I've heard this in Potter Park as well. I don't have money for my budget. And they're right. £25 a week is not much money. I'd hope to give people tools to take away when they'd left the centre, but they just couldn't grasp that they needed to budget, and it was kind of a little bit kind of fixed on the lack of money. On top of that, some of these guys were going through a really difficult time in the addictions programme. That kind of meant things like cigarettes, which, like, my kind of hat on, cigarettes are a bit of a luxury, to be honest. But no, I need them. You know, you're not taking my cigarettes away. I need my cigarettes. Or like, what about your TV? You know, could you cut back on that as well? You can tell you, that's a necessity as well. So while the CAP manual talks about looking at necessities and luxuries, kind of my idea of necessities and luxuries and other people's ideas can be miles apart. At one point, I was told that's a harsh dad, really, because I don't have a TV at home. And I said I don't have a TV license, I don't have a TV at home. You've got a kid and you don't have a TV? You're a harsh dad. Okay. It was kind of insulting and kind of sad and funny at the same time. I also set aside some additional time for the individuals to come along and problem solve with their budget. Not one turned up. And after three sessions with them, I was kind of feeling a bit of despair. I wasn't really feeling like hope had walked into the building. I was like, what's the point? I didn't really want a budget. But I kind of think, when Nicola asked me to prepare this talk, it really prompted a lot more of a deeper reflection, really. How do we work with people on the margins who don't feel they have much control in their lives? Things are stacked against them, so what's the point? So much of our culture strongly values being independent. If you're like me, you kind of might be tearing your hair out of the kind of political rhetoric of the hard-working people. What does it mean to not be an achiever? And where does Jesus fit into this? What's our values? What are Jesus' values? And I kind of just wanted to share some reflections on the teaching of Jesus. And I kind of wonder if there's a space in the middle, really. So we've got Jesus saying in the Beatitudes in Matthew that kind of the blessed are the poor, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. Blessed are those who mourn, for they'll be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they'll inherit the earth. And Jesus seems to be saying that the people who are the have-nots, they're actually the people who are the haves. They are the blessed people. And so we can kind of come to people who are the poor and margins and proclaim the hope of the kingdom that, yes, you are the people who are blessed. But we also live in this space where we don't want to romanticise poverty either, and we see that Jesus also has a really challenging teaching. And he says that if you're not following the teaching, you're really stupid. You're like a guy who built a house on the sand and it just got washed away, came crashing down. So we need to be people who not only hear what Jesus says, but also to build our lives on that. When we work with people from different cultures and backgrounds, we need to remember that sometimes our values are just different to theirs, neither right nor wrong. But we also need to look to Jesus and see, well, what are the values of the kingdom? I didn't get through much of my course material in those 3 weeks, and I wasn't even sure how to try and validate the immense financial challenges that these guys faced. I really wanted to encourage them to use their money well and to make good decisions. And part of me on reflection just thinks I just need to entrust this over to Jesus and trust that he will use our words to sink in people's hearts and take root. Even just thinking, oh, I could budget, that might be quite a transforming belief to somebody. Ultimately, people we work with belong to Jesus, and he longs to give them life in all its forms.
Thank you, Ben. What killed you? My God. God is good. Okay. So before I can leave you with the springboard for what I believe was next, I thought, kind of 5 years in, I'd share some of my more notable moments as a CAP debt centre manager. I am not a fan of statistics or key point indicators, and I have wrestled for a long time with head office, with myself, a little bit with Alan, not too much with Alan, about recording summations and debt freeness and the number of people that we see and so on, because every centre is different. And I think that perhaps Glasgow being so territorial, we've perhaps had a different shot. In saying that I'm not a fan of centre statistics, I had great pleasure in telling you that we hold the centre network record for naked clients out of all the other debt centres in the whole of the UK. Glasgow West 2, the rest of the UK. It's not that kind of, is it? I think God has loosened my sense of humour. It was always slightly inappropriate, but now it is, I think, very inappropriate. If you're ever at the receiving end of that, I apologise, but I am a product of experience. I remember the time I went into a lady's house and she gave me her last tea bag, and then she disappeared to the toilet. And I was sitting there going, God, isn't she good? Isn't she good that she gave me her last tea bag? And then her cat walked along the counter and licked my cup of tea. I was like, I can't drink that. I hate cats. I didn't just dislike that. Actually, I don't hate many things in this world, but cats is one of them. And I had to drink it. Bag, and I prayed for that cup of tea. God, don't let me catch anything. Don't let me grow whiskers, God. I have 15 clients who became deaf. I have clients who have absolutely kicked my backside at Monopoly, and I needed more grace for them than I think I needed for any other. I won an award in Bradford once for dressing up as Claudia Winkleman at a CAP event. I was really pleased, it was a pretty good break, and I got the eyeliner right and was dead chuffed. I had a client who phoned me at 3 o'clock in the morning, and for some reason my phone was on, and he was experiencing suicidal thoughts. Gordy was all night, and I had the boys in the house, and I said to him, listen, I can't come out as long as you'll be soft. I'm not sure what you expect me to do. Listen, we've got a meeting tomorrow. Promise me you're going to do anything stupid. You've promised me we had what was it called? revise this suicide agreement. I, such and such a client, promise not to kill myself until next week when I see Nicola. We probably could have worded it slightly better. So, not knowing what else to do, I phoned the police and I said, listen, I believe there could be an incident. I'm not able, and I don't think I particularly want to get personally, physically involved in that situation. He'd been drinking very, very heavily. He's still a friend, still struggling. So the police went to his house. They phoned me to say, we can't find it. I was like, it's number 25. And they were like, we can see number 21 and we can see number 27. I was like, look behind the hedge. They're like, oh, yes, there it is. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. And they kicked his door down. And then the next morning when I went to see him, he was in a big huff because they'd kicked his door down. And he wanted me to pay for a new door. And I was like, you're still alive. I'm not paying for your new door. I had a client who tried to steal my identity, so I got a number of calls from different agencies offering huge amounts of credit and or requesting that I pay back the £7,000 that I owe them. Thankfully I was able to get that sorted. Gordy and I helped a client flit from a violent and dangerous marital situation. We sat outside her house with the engine running and she ran inside to get her laptop and her passport. That was quite exciting. There was a time that I was leading Cap Sunday in Killerman Church in Merseyside, and I had probably given in to the sin of pride, and I was telling the congregation about my children and their 3 penny banks. And they get pocket money, and 1 penny goes into the spend piggy bank, and one penny goes into the save piggy bank, and 1 penny goes into the share piggy bank. At Christmas, we decide what we want to spend our money on. And at Christmas, we decide who we're sharing our money with. And Joshua shouted from the back of the church, yes, but you emptied my piggy bank to pay the window cleaner. So arts and comedy, timing. Other notable moments in this. The clients that I have mentioned have become friends, and clients like David who have become family. The grace which with I was nurtured and loved through every wrestle that I've had with this role. And Iris is sitting here, and Iris was my cap backbone, and Jean Sweeney, who's not here, but many of you will remember her. Alan Cruden, who's here somewhere, who has just so faithfully supported Cap in the 6 years, and has really been a very integral part of our foundation, what we've been building. The grace from Alan as I made mistakes and told him, I don't love this job anymore, this job is rubbish, this job is too hard, I love this job. Looking around after 4 years of working largely on my own and seeing team, seeing community, gathering together with people that love each other and love our clients, and I love our clients, and that's one of the things I think that makes handing over the baton particularly significant for me, that God has shown me how to love in a way that I have never loved before. I have loved my clients, and will continue to do so. There's a couple here already referring to themselves as Auntie Mary from Mary Hill, and she's promised that she'll stop sneaking whenever I'm away abroad, so that'll be good. It's been a really significant 5 years, personally and professionally, and I think for the centre. And I'm going to just leave two last things with you before I hand over to David for prayer. My personal epiphany is this, and it's probably taken 5 years until I've been at a point to actually articulate it. And I read it in a book recently. It's a book called Get Weird. And it's about a Greek word called kodesh, about how we have this holy creativity inside of us. And we spend most of our lives getting it kicked out, squashed down, coloured inside the world, full drilled. And God's kind of been saying to me, nah, Nicola, don't follow the real pen. You know, you do it my way. And that's been very exciting. And over the last little while, God has been saying to me, Nicola, why do you feel you have something to prove when you have so much to give? And that's my challenge to everyone here today. This is what I have learned, and it's taken 5 years, and sometimes I need to learn these lessons more than once. I have nothing to prove as the debt centre manager. I have just been here in the job that God gave me when I told him it was my dream job. He is a good father. And I have nothing to prove. I am so happy to pass the baton on to whoever comes next, because I believe that what comes next is going to be really, really good. I'm excited to see how the next person takes that baton and builds the house. And maybe that's just to be something for us all to think about. Why do we feel we've got something to prove when all God asks us is to have something to give? As I went to prepare for the last learning community, I was really praying about the centre, and I felt God saying, I was like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And I felt God saying, well, you've been digging the foundations. This is great. You have dug and dug and dug and dug. And digging foundations can be rewarding as you see them. But as Ben said, it can also be messy and tiring and frustrating, and sometimes it rains and they fill up with water. But whoever comes next, whoever takes over from me, is going to build such a house for Jesus, with many rooms for all our clients. And I love this job so much. I'm really happy to step back from it because of why we're stepping back from it. And it has been a great learning curve. A great privilege, and I've had a lot of fun doing this job actually. I believe that God has got a huge potential, so as I challenge you to think about what you can give, I also challenge you to fly the cat flag in Glasgow West, okay? I think we're probably done with the naked clients. I think we've probably had our process, so there's nothing to fear. everything else seems fairly straightforward after that, that's fair to say. Please pray as we as the interviewing point. Please pray that the CAP community will stick together. David, I'm stepping on your toes a little bit, but you're coming up next. I believe that there is a rich store of salvation and a rich store of wisdom and a rich store of knowledge for us as a church family. For whoever, the very fortunate individual who gets to take over this role and to meet these wonderful, brave, resilient people who become our clients and then our friends. For us as a congregation, as we learn to use what being a CAP debt centre actually means, and a hub in Glasgow, and I believe that we have influence. I believe still that we are a vehicle for revival. I believe still that we are going to transform community and culture. And I believe still that we are going to herald hope in a corrupt nation. So pray, please, as I take a wee step back and somebody new steps in, and just please extend to them the same grace that you have extended to me. And please pray for our family as we get used to our new challenges. I'm going to hand over to David, and then that's me done.
Community will miss Nicola. It's one thing that Nicola will miss in our clients is our wee ladies. Every time I meet her, we're going somewhere, she'll say, we've got a wee lady to see this afternoon, we've got a wee lady to deliver some food to. I said, do you not get any big ladies? No, always wee ladies. And I think that's what she'll miss most. One of the words which has come up this morning is hope. And I always remember when I was working in the shop, this young girl came in with her mother. She must have been about four. It was about 4:30. She got dragged into this charity shop with her mum. And the wee girl says, "Do you paint nails?" And I say, "No, sorry, we don't." And she says, "Oh." She said, "My mum's getting fed up. She's not taking me anywhere now to get my nails painted." And as she was leaving, she said, "Never give up hope." From a wee girl of four, I thought it was brilliant. And through CAP, we not only help clients, but we help the wider world to understand what poverty is. Because someone asked me a few years ago what charities I worked with, and I said, I volunteered with CAP. And they said, "Well, what do they do?" I said, "Well, they help people who are in debt." And he said, "Well, there's a simple answer to that. Don't get into debt in the first place." And I thought, how misunderstood, how lacking in understanding he was. But it's what someone has said, as Nicola and Maureen and Ben said, no one gets into debt through choice. But in saying that, we'd like to ask you to pray for the CAP Centre, not just today, but hold some of these thoughts as you leave and add them to your prayers at night and during the day as well. Because God is always listening, not just in those 5 minutes before we go to bed, but every moment of every day and every night. And in your prayers, we'd ask you to pray for the CAP Centre, for the people, our clients who have become debt-free since we opened those 6 years ago, and all the people who have met with God. My first step was to meet CAP. The next step was to meet God. I'd ask you to pray for the CAP community in White Inch and the other partnering churches throughout the west of Glasgow, that we can all pull together as we move forward into this new season and take this new step forward. I'd ask you to pray that God helps to provide the finances and physical and spiritual support that we need, and for that support to be ongoing and be sustainable. I ask you also to pray for all our clients, because at the end of the day, it's our clients that matter, that they would truly not only become debt-free, but they'd get back their life, that they would have been moved from that isolation, that shame that they feel, and be able to start their life anew and be to be transformed in their lives through their meeting with Jesus. I ask you to pray for the new centre manager, that the right person comes forward to carry that baton, and that the process of appointing the new manager goes smoothly and quickly. And lastly, to pray for all the CAP staff in the headquarters in Bradford, in the new National Scottish Centre in Edinburgh, and for all the CAP centres throughout the UK. And now, I'd just like to finish with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Come, your will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we forget those who sin against us. Not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. Amen.
we just bless and honour the CAP team. And the faithfulness to the cause and to what you have been called to do is just, yeah, it's phenomenal. So thank you. And I mean, pray for you guys as you head off onto new ventures and new challenges as well. And we stand with you in that too. So thank you so much for sharing.